Atlantic Ocean, just beyond the Strait of Gibraltar. But far beneath the waves and mankind's ability to reach rests the lost city of Atlantis. Appearing as a majestic dome city on the ocean floor, Atlantis exemplifies splendor and beauty. In the center of the city is a raised castle, its opulence outshining the rest of the city. In the throne room, Namor sits on a grand golden throne as two members of his council speak with him. He is bedecked in a traditional long vest and fish scale pants.
My king, I am afraid we do not bear good news. Our reports show that if the surface dwellers continue to kill the sea life at their current pace, in less than a decade we will be facing a hunger crisis Atlantis has not seen in 1,000 years.
And we are receiving word from our outposts across the globe that our waters become more uninhabitable by the year. Heavy metals waste of both biological origin and none, and that trash heap out in the middle of the Pacific have made living in the affected areas almost untenable. We still have not been able to revive the outposts near the Isle of Japan due to the continued radiation leak.
We humbly request that you try again to meet with the surface dwellers in their United Nations and petition them
I have heard enough.
Sir, if I may, I don't think you understand
this. I have heard enough! And you shall not ever tell me what I do or do not understand.
Namor glares down at the two counselors as they both bow deeply to him.
I am very sorry, my king. Please accept my apologies for my hubris.
Before Namor can respond, the closed doors to the throne burst open and in swims a large Atlantean man, flanked by two soldiers. He's outfitted with golden armor that does not tarnish in the seawater and contrasts well with his scaly blue skin. In his arms, he carries a large humanoid-shaped object that is draped in a cloth.
What is the meaning of this, Atuma? I am in a meeting.
Hey, King Namor. My sincerest apologies, but this could not wait. May we have the room?
Atuma approaches the throne while Namor dismisses the others. Atuma waits until they are alone before speaking.
Namor, the surface dwellers have begun an offensive. They've attacked one of our outposts near the Indian subcontinent.
And why am I just now hearing about this?
I did not wish to create a panic. I did not believe the report at first, until...
Atuma sets the bundle down at Namor's feet and uncovers it to reveal the body of a mutilated Atlantean woman. Her body has been riddled with bullet holes. There is a horrible chemical burn running from her torso down her legs, and she is missing her right arm at the shoulder as evidence of being near an explosion.
And we are certain the surface dwellers attacked. Last I checked, they did not have the weaponry to penetrate our shields.
They attacked during maintenance of the shielding. We do not use bullets, sir, or chemical warfare utilized to create fire under the waves. This was the humans.
This is unfortunate, and this aggression must be met. As War Minister, I am authorizing you to recall every able-bodied soldier to Atlantis and ready them for a march on the surface. I must speak to my cousin and prepare her to hold the throne in my absence. We march on the human city of New York in 6 hours. Imperius Rex!
Atuma executes an Atlantean salute, then gathers the body and swims out of the throne room. A savage, ruthless smile splits across his face as he leaves.
We'll be right back.
Back on the surface, early morning light streams down a city avenue. A very shabbily clothed Bruce Banner approaches one of the dwindling number of public payphones and hooks up a scrambling device to the headset. Then he places a call out to Arizona and waits as it rings.
Hello? This is Betty.
Hey, Betty. How's it going?
Oh, my God. Bruce, I've been worried sick about you. The attack in New York was a week ago, and you're just now calling me? Oh, and Ricky's been blowing up my phone the whole time.
Betty Ross is Bruce's Spitfire girlfriend. She's also the daughter of General Thunderbolt Ross, Bruce's old boss back at the Gamma facility, and the man currently hunting him down. Rick Jones was the boy Bruce had saved during the test run that created the Hulk, but calling him Ricky was a code word for the couple.
Yeah, well, the other guy kind of painted a target on me. I had to get out of the Big Apple and lay low for a bit as I headed west. But how are you and Ricky?
I'm fine, except for worrying about you the whole time. And he's doing fine with his courses, but he got into a fight the other day, sticking up for you. He is your number one fan.
Yeah, well, of course he is. Tell him I'll be around soon.
But will you? You can't keep running like this, Bruce. Have you thought about turning to your friends for help?
What, that group I... the other guy teamed up with? The Avengers or whatever? No, they can't help me, Betts.
I saw the videos later. A damn god barely held his own against him. He's just too powerful.
Then maybe not with your Hulk problem. You did help save the city. Maybe that could get you a pardon or something? Help get you-know-who off your back?
Ha! Your father's not a dark wizard.
No, but he can certainly be an evil jerk sometimes.
Look, Betts, I gotta get going. My train is coming. I just...
needed to hear your voice.
Bruce, I miss you. I want you to be able to come home.
One day. I promise. In the meantime, I think some good, clean mountain air will help me clear my mind.
Okay. Bye, Bruce. I love you.
Love you, too. Bye, Betts.
Betty hangs up her cell and, knowing she can't go back to sleep now, gets up. She ties a bathrobe around her lithe form and heads downstairs to find her father and one of his tech cronies sitting at her kitchen table. A laptop sits open with other bits of hardware attached to it. She walks in just as the technical expert removes his headphones and shakes his head.
I'm sorry, General. The best we got is somewhere between Columbus and Chicago.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry about that, Dad. Was I supposed to hold on to him longer or something?
General Ross stands as she enters. Though he's over 60 and has developed a bit of a paunch, his broad-shouldered frame and towering height is still imposing to most people. His graying mustache droops slightly into a scowl, but it quickly passes. Without a word to his daughter, he motions for the tech guy to gather his things and heads out of Betty's townhouse.
Oh, good. There's coffee. What, no donuts this time? You know how much I love those little chocolate ones. They really make these early morning traces special.
There is only the slightest hesitation in the general's step before he continues out the door. Betty does not even try to stop him, instead opting to pour herself a cup of coffee and getting started with her day.
Yeah, I'm terribly sorry that didn't work out. I know you were enjoying the quality time as much as I was. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Betty watches her father's car pull away through her kitchen window and sips smugly on her morning caffeine. Her thoughts turn to Bruce, hoping he is okay. Back at the payphone, Bruce quickly hangs up the phone and disconnects the scrambler device. He hopes the clues he left in the phone call would send the general's forces scrambling towards the Rockies or wherever. He heads away from the payphone and walks down a broken sidewalk as he makes his way back to his rundown hiding spot in Hell's Kitchen. A Above the New York City skyline, the familiar sight of Thor trailing his trusted hammer is spotted by onlookers. He is running late to a very important meeting at the newly minted Avengers Mansion, which is housed in the remains of the art gallery where they fought Loki. He had to lie to Jane again about why he could not cover his shift at the office, which did not sit well with him. He lands on the small, manicured lawn of the mansion grounds just as his comlink beeps.
Pleasant greetings, Thor. The team is waiting for you inside. Iron Man is anxious to get started.
Tell them I'm here, Automaton. I'm in no mood for frivolities.
I do beg your pardon, sir. I'm a highly sophisticated protocol program, designed to help both Mr. Stark and the Iron Man when need be. I am not an automaton.
What you are is a soulless machine, and I do not wish to continue this discussion. Where is the team?
Thor walks through the double doors that lead into the main lobby. Construction workers and equipment move about the area. Stacks of drywall, mounds of metal wire, and various tools litter the marble floor. Even in its current half-constructed state, Thor can already see the glamour the Avengers benefactor is aiming for. It would not rival Asgard, but for a human's capability, it would do.
They are on the basement level. There is an elevator to your left, sir. The team is in the room at the end on the right.
It takes Thor only a moment to find the elevator and head down into the basement. He steps off into a metal corridor. Unlike the area above, this one is completely finished. The walls and the ceilings gleam under the fluorescent lighting. There are a couple of pocket recesses along the corridor as indications of other rooms. Thor walks into a room Jarvis indicated earlier and finds the rest of the Avengers suited up and standing in a large, empty room.
About time you showed up. I have three important meetings that I need to be at for Mr. Stark.
Cut him some slack, Shellhead. I'm sure it's hard to tell time wherever he goes.
Yeah, that is strange. Where do you go, Thor? Jarvis loses contact with that comlink every time you disappear.
Where I go is none of your concern, and I would urge you to drop the matter. I appear when I am needed, and that is all.
And here I thought he was the god of thunder. More like the god of secrets.
Enough. What is the point of this meeting?
Don't know. Ant-Man called it.
Right. First, I need to tell you guys that I've changed my code name. I'm Giant Man now.
Oh, man. And I thought Ant-Man was bad. Wasp, please tell me he's not serious.
I'm afraid he is. He's even having me make a different suit.
Hey, I'm right here. And yeah, I'm serious. I feel it fits with—
Do you have any idea how much of a pain in the ass it'll be to change that? I can't believe I spent so much time making sure they got your name right. Why are you changing it? You do the ant thing still, right?
Size shifting is more noticeable. And I think it'll fit better with the likes of Iron Man and Thor.
Right. Can't have the media thinking you're too girly to have a name closely associated with your girlfriends.
That's not what
Is this why I'm here? To listen to mortals bicker amongst yourselves?
The three helmeted heroes share the equivalent of a sheepish look before Giant Man steps forward and gestures about the room.
No, sorry, Thor. I called you all to show you this room. Welcome to our combat training room. I've been working with the AI Jarvis.
He's not an AI.
This? To create scenarios and holographic hard light dummies for us to fight against. Took him a bit to render a couple villains from the news and create... Well, I'll show you. Jarvis, initiate training program 001.exe, please.
Right away, sir.
From above, a round metallic ball appears, then lights up. The walls, the ceiling, and the floor disappear and are replaced by a block of the city. A pair of masculine bodies then materialize at the end of the block. One is a large figure in a broken radiation suit with a glowing aura of brilliant neon green. The other is a lanky fellow in a business suit holding a ray gun. He has slick back, black hair, and a pencil-thin goatee.
I recognize the large one. Radioactive Man, your press called him. I fought him in China.
Yep. I figured his power set would be fairly easy to program. Iron Man, do you recognize the other guy?
No. Jarvis, who is this Joker?
That would be Bruno Horgan, also known as the Melter. You fought him several months ago, sir.
Bruno? That loser? He was the best you could come up with?
Again, he had a pretty easy power set to replicate. Are you gonna ride my ass the whole time on this or what?
Oh, fine, whatever. What do we need to do to fight them?
First, mind your distance. I only have a few blocks programmed, and we can't spread out too far. Second, mind your shots. The walls are energy and impact shielded, but I haven't tested them against lightning and a magic hammer. Third, the bad guys aren't forced yet.
So why are we doing this now? Why not wait until it was done?
I just thought...
Officially bored. Jarvis, start the attack. Avengers, let's go to work.
The two villains come to life and take up the exact same animation as they run towards the Avengers. Iron Man juts up several feet as Thor takes a fighting stance and begins to wind up his hammer.
Jarvis, pause program.
The villains freeze in perfectly synchronized step.
Oh, for the love of... Now what?
Avengers, let's go to work.
Tell me you're not serious about that as our battle cry.
Well, it's the first good idea this room's had all day, Giant Man.
Giant Man engages the button for his PIM particles and grows the several feet needed to look Iron Man in the eye.
Say that again to my face.
Enough! God, this measuring contest has got to end. If you two can't settle this like adults, then I'm out of here. Jarvis, end program.
Right away, ma'am.
The city block fades away, returning the combat training room to its standard shape. The Wasp heads for the door with Thor right on her heels.
Aye. This is no way to lead a team, and I have other-
I'm terribly sorry to interrupt, but there's a priority call for Iron Man. Shall I patch it through?
Yeah, Jarvis, send it to my helmet only.
Right away, sir.
Okay, Stark speaking. Rhodey, my man. What's up? I'm kind of in the middle of something.
Thousands of miles away in the Arctic Circle, an African-American man is standing at the opening to a large insulated tent. This man is former Lieutenant James Rhodey Rhodes, and he has a grin that stretches from ear to ear.
Tony, do me a favor. Put aside whatever blonde you're doing and listen up. You need to get up here. The climate guys you sent me to shuttle around have found something. Something groundbreaking. You need to get here, like 10 minutes ago.
Well, that's going to be an issue. I'm indisposed right now. But I can send my bodyguard to you. He'll get there faster anyway. And he's with the Avengers.
Well, looks like I'm meeting all the celebrities today. Yeah, send them up.
If they're half as smart as you say they are, we can use them here too.
They'll be on their way ASAP. Thanks for the call, Rhodey. I'll see you when I see ya.
You're lost, man. Later.
The line goes silent. And Stark takes a moment to compartmentalize before engaging with the rest of the team.
Okay, that was a call from Mr. Stark. He wants us to investigate something his team of climate scientists found up in the Arctic. Says it's very important, and we need to go now.
What? Just because Moneybag says jump, we say how high? I've got experiments running and the combat room to finish.
If you're going to fight me every time I say something, then you can stay behind. Better yet, you can get the hell off the team.
There is a tense moment between the two men of science before the Wasp interposes herself between them.
Come on, Giant Man. Let's shrink down and ride with Thor. This is what the Avengers are supposed to do.
Fine. Let's go.
Moments later, Iron Man and Thor, with the two shrunken heroes on the god's shoulders, take off from the mansion and head in a northeasterly direction as fast as they can.
Ma'am? I'm sorry to intrude, but we have something on radar that... Well, it's easier to show than explain.
Well, try to explain it anyways, Adams. I assume it has something to do with why we stopped moving.
We're seeing a lot of movement that we can't explain. The XO thought you should be made aware.
Very well. Lead the way, Ensign.
Aboard the USCGC Oak, Captain Williams follows one of her crewmen from the cabin back to the bridge of her ship. Her executive officer, Alenko, stands as she approaches.
Captain on the bridge!
What seems to be the trouble, Alenko?
It's the strangest thing, Captain. It's like every aquatic animal is... well, running.
Captain Williams leans over to peer at the radar console. It is also sensitive enough to ping off the marine life in the area. It is useful to make sure that they do not run over a pod of whales or anything. The technician screen is full of little green dots as the radar sweeps around, all moving at top speed.
It's like the ocean is on fire.
That is very odd. Did this just start up?
Before EXO can respond, the emergency line lights up. The posted technician, Trainer, immediately answers the call.
This is the USCGCO. What is your emergency? Over.
Mayday, mayday. This is the Enterprise. We're going down. They're sinking my ship.
Say again. We can barely hear you. What are your coordinates? Over.
Both the captain and the XO walk over to the emergency technician station as she tries to keep the connection stable.
I said we're going down. Under attack. Coordinates are...
The line goes dead before the poor man can finish his sentence. Both Williams and Alenko share a worried look.
Trainer, were you able to get a general head?
His words are cut off as another call reaches Trainer's station. Then another, and another.
Captain, something big is heading our way and fast. Bearing... Shit, it's on top of us!
Something large rams into the Coast Guard ship, throwing everyone standing off their feet. Captain Williams quickly catches herself and glares at Adams as she runs for her command console.
What the hell was that, Adams?
Too much radar noise, ma'am. We can't...
All hands, battle stations. We're going to make whoever is hitting us regret it.
The tentacle the size of a school bus rises just off the starboard side of the ship. Everyone stops as shock and disbelief take root in their minds. They're witnessing a tall tale, a nautical legend, come to life. It lashes towards the ship.
Brace for impact.
The giant tentacle rears back and readies itself for another strike. At the same moment, a second one appears off the port side.
Alenko, sound the distress call.
This is Captain Williams speaking. All hands abandon ship. I say again, this is Captain Williams. All hands, abandon ship.
Faced with the terror they have never seen before, it is pandemonium as the crew of the Oak race for the lifeboats. The tentacles begin working in unison to beat the ship into salvage.
When we get back, I'm putting a thermal lining in the suit. This cold is unreasonable.
Think you could fit one in for me, too?
That depends. For this costume, or just the new one?
Why do I get the feeling that either answer lands me in the doghouse?
Wait. Do you hear that?
The Avengers come to stop in the air as Thor's gaze becomes unfocused and he scans the horizon.
Hear what?
Sounds like... metal? Being shredded. And... people yelling.
Jarvis, access all emergency bandwidths. Perhaps whoever is out there sent out an SOS.
Right away, sir. Accessing. Yes, there appears to be several emergency broadcasts from ships all over the region.
And why the hell didn't you push the notifications through?
You did not tell me to do so, sir.
At least I'm not the only one in trouble now.
We need to go help the crews of those ships, Iron Man. It is our duty as Avengers.
Hold up. We also need to investigate what Stark's team found up here.
Then we should split up.
Fine. Thor and I will head for the ships. You two go investigate the thing for Stark.
And just how am I supposed to get there, Shellhead? I can't fly.
Then ride up. Right. Ocean. There are no ants.
I hate to do this, but Iron Man, you and Giant Man should take the Stark case.
Oh, come on!
Not happening.
Enough! The Wasp is right. We will not know what we will find, and we may need to stay in the air.
Plus, they could use your brains there, dear, giant man. You'll be more useful on dry ground than in the water.
Fine. Come here, Iron Man. I need to hop over.
Iron Man maneuvers over to Thor, and Giant Man jumps from one hero to the other. Neither Avenger seems particularly happy about this outcome.
All right, Avengers, let's do this.
No, sweetheart.
Nay.
Oh, shut up.
With that attempt at a rallying cry behind them, the four Avengers part ways. Thor and the Wasp head further east while Iron Man and Giant Man continue heading north towards the Arctic Circle.
Better hold on to your butt, Bug. We're going supersonic.
Don't you start with that bug bullshit!
A series of small flaps open around Iron Man's shoulder blades to reveal a set of additional thrusters that light up. Giant Man barely has time to find a recess before he is plastered against Iron Man's armor by the G-forces. Though it feels like an eternity to Giant Man, in moments the pair arrive at the Stark Scientist's makeshift compound. It is a grouping of tents of various sizes with a Stark Quinjet parked off to the side. Rhodey steps out of the tent to greet them.
Funny. I thought Tony said you were with the Avengers.
Whoa!
He is. Well, at least some of us. Hi, I'm Giant Man. I'm the leader of the team.
Leader? You couldn't lead ants to a damn picnic.
Wait, I thought you were Ant-Man.
It's a whole thing. Now, what do you have for us, Rhodes?
Right. Come this way, gentlemen.
Rhodey leads the two men into the medical tent. It is large enough to hold three or four patients, should there be a need. The bed in the furthest corner has two scientists hovering around it, obscuring a covered humanoid form in the bed. A third scientist is standing over a large, disc-shaped object, which immediately draws Iron Man's attention. He walks over to it.
Jarvis, what am I looking at?
Analyzing. This is rather peculiar, sir. This appears to be made of vibranium.
That's not possible. The Wakandans haven't opened their borders since World War II. It's impossible to get.
That time frame would match the last time the United States government had access to the metal. Most of the reports are redacted, but from what I can deduce, this object matches an experimental device created and used by the U.S. Army.
Hey, Iron Man, you, still with us?
Yeah, I'm right here. Jarvis was just telling me about this object. Rhodes, where did you guys find it?
We came across the cockpit of an old plane. Some sort of proto-jet buried in the ice. Nothing we weren't expecting, as there had been other parts collected earlier. Ice guys said the area's age was about 70 years. Something about carbon levels or whatever matching wartime output.
Okay, but that doesn't tell us where you found it.
I'm getting there. It's the best part of the story. Hey, you two. Step aside. Let the Avengers see what we fished out of the ice.
The two scientists step aside and leave the tent. On the bed lies a large blonde man, dressed in an odd set of army fatigues mixed with a red, white, and blue motif. He's also covered in thermal heating blankets and monitoring equipment. He is ghostly pale. Ice still clings to his uniform and hair. There is the slow, steady movement of his chest rising and falling. Both Avengers slowly approach the bed as Giant Man checks out the monitoring equipment.
You found it with him? What is he, a ice climber? A lost hiker?
If he was a hiker from 1944, sure.
I'm sorry, what?
We found the shield on him, in the cockpit, covered in ice.
That's impossible.
I know. Hear me out, though. We had a legend in the Marine Corps about a man that could do improbable things. A super soldier, if you will. They said he let the government do some weird experiment on him. After that, he could bend steel with his bare hands, beat 100 men without breaking a sweat, do all kinds of crazy shit. Sounds like a bunch of soldier talk. I know. But they said he disappeared during the war.
And you think it's this guy?
Rhodey hands Iron Man a pair of old dog tags.
Pull those off of him when we could. Hey, check the name. Hell, check the style. Haven't seen dog tags like that outside of a museum.
Steven Rogers, 549-85870. Is that supposed to mean something to me?
To anyone with military experience, yeah. That was the name of the man they called Captain America.
The two Avengers turn back to the mystery man as the heart monitor starts spiking. He twitches once before his blue eyes spring open, and he takes a haggard breath.
Bucky.
Back in New York City, a U.S. Customs agent is making his normal rounds on the docks. He is staring off into the horizon, enjoying the way the afternoon light plays across the water, before something odd catches his eye. It is a rolling wave that is moving against the current. He watches as several large vessels burst out of the sea and come speeding up to the docks. The agent reaches for his radio.
We have multiple unknown bogies approaching the docks. I need backup ASAP. How the hell did this happen?
The agent takes cover behind a large shipping container as the vessels beach themselves onto the concrete docks. The lead one opens by dropping a ramp, and Namor steps out, alone. He is unarmored, save for the matched set of golden bracers and greaves. The agent pulls a sidearm and steps out to speak with the invader.
Turn back now! Get back in your ships and get the hell off the docks! You are trespassing on U.S. soil!
No one threatens Namor.
With blinding speed, Namor dashes towards the agent. He slaps the gun from the man's hands easily, but carefully as to not hurt the man. Stunned, the man looks up at the king and backs up.
I do not wish to harm you, but I am here to conquer. If you fight, you will be killed. Now, stand aside and make way for Namor, King of Atlantis, Imperius Rex!
At his words, the ramps for the other ships begin dropping. Masses of Atlantean soldiers start marching out in formation. Atuma and several high-ranking counselors appear out of Namor's vessel and approach him. One of them presents Namor's trident to him, which he takes.
What is your name?
Rusty. Rusty McClare.
Very well. Atuma, take Mr. McClear here into custody as our first prisoner of war. See to it that he receives our best.
Of course, my liege.
Namor then raises his trident and brings the point down to indicate they are moving. Atuma holds back with a trusted captain and a firm hand on Rusty until Namor passes out of sight. Then Atuma turns to the agent and snarls.
Run, little fish, as fast as you can.
Rusty turns and books it for the safety of the shipping containers. Atuma holds his hand up to stop the captain.
Wait for it. Now!
The captain raises his spear and pulls the trigger. Energy crackles at the end, then blasts out towards their target. The shot rips through Rusty's heart. He is dead before his body hits the ground.
Filthy humans. The world would be a much better place with their demise. Let the record show that the prisoner attempted to escape and had to be executed, as per the rules of Atlantean warfare.
The captain nods his head, and the two fall in behind Namor's invading army.
It really wasn't that bad, right?
It was no better or worse than Iron Man's attempt earlier. Now, please, I need silence to locate the ship so we may help its crew.
Right, sorry. We need to find them to help them.
Thor and the Wasp have been traveling for several minutes as Thor attempted to track down the source of the banging metal and screams of panic. The conversation between the two had been stilted, awkward, and mostly one-sided on the Wasp's part.
I wish Hank was here. I really need to lighten up on him.
There is our foe.
The Wasp looks up to where Thor is pointing and cannot believe her eyes. Two massive tentacles are ripping a U.S. Coast Guard ship to pieces while the crew is evacuating. Thor comes to a stop, hovering over the spectacle below.
Man, did our lives get weird. Okay, Thor, what's the plan?
We heat it until it stops moving. Come, fellow Avenger, once more into the fray.
Ugh, I'll just not tell the others you said that. Could you elaborate more on the plan, or...
No.
Thor angles Mjolnir down and dives towards the ship at top speed, nearly knocking the Wasp loose from his shoulder. He lands on the crumbling deck of the ship, then hurls the hammer at one of the tentacles.
How about thee?
I'm going to check in with the crew. Think you can hold it?
I was fighting mysterious and powerful creatures before man could—
Oh my god, just say yes, Wasp! I've got this!
yes, Wasp. I have this.
All right! Finally! Acting like a team!
She flies off to find an officer of the ship, leaving Thor alone with the tentacles. Mjolnir returns to his hand as he stands there accepting the chastisement.
She would fit in well with Sif and the Valkyries.
One of the tentacles rears back and hurls itself at Thor, bringing him back to the moment.
Come, Kraken Spawn!
Meanwhile, the Wasp flies out to the lifeboats. As she approaches, she notices the water is rather choppy around them.
Wait, it's not the water that's rough. Are those orcas?
Indeed, large black fins are breaking through the surface of the water as a pod of killer whales attack the sailors. The Wasp flits about from lifeboat to lifeboat until she finds a woman in a captain's hat arguing with a man of obviously lower rank. The sailors on this boat are armed, pointing their weapons at the water, but not firing.
Endangered or not, it's either us or them at this point, ma'am.
No, Adams, we can't just kill the goddamn orcas.
I could help.
Every sailor on the boat immediately turn their weapons on her. The captain gives the Wasp an angry glare.
Wait, who the hell are you?
I'm the Wasp, with the Avengers. We saved New York City last week. Maybe you've heard about it?
No, what you are is a freak citizen in a mask in the middle of a military operation, which puts you under arrest.
I'm with the Thunder God up there. I am here to help you.
Don't care and don't need it. Elenco, take her.
No, I don't think so.
Just as another man moves towards her, the Wasp shrinks back down and flies away. She can see the sailors trying to track her with their weapons, but they quickly lose sight of her as an orca rams the lifeboat.
That captain better give me some leniency for this, and my electrical insulation better not give out.
The Wasp dives into the water, a decision she immediately regrets as the icy cold bites down into her very bones and drives the breath from her lungs. All around her, the pod of killer whales swim about as they continue to slam into the lifeboats.
Focus. You don't want it to be seafood.
She powers up her gauntlet-mounted blasters, then slams them together. Under the water, the electrical charge radiates out from her, catching several members of the pod. The seawater is a perfect medium to disperse it. The Wasp watches from under the waves as the pod scatters, then swims back up to the surface. Thankfully, the suits are vacuum sealed, so no water has seeped into her suit.
Okay, now just get out of here.
Now you hold it right there.
The sailors on the lifeboats, now that they are not under attack by the orcas, have surrounded the Wasp. All have their weapons trained on her.
Thor, if you can hear me, I really could use your help.
Hold, mortals!
The sailors immediately turn their weapons on the floating form of Thor. He slowly descends towards the Wasp until he is right over her.
God damn it, another one! Get your ass in a boat and surrender yourself to us, or we will open fire. I have had a fantastic day today, so please, please just give me a reason.
Have you no honor? No courtesy for those who saved you, your crew, and your ship?
Thor gestures behind him with his free hand. Everyone can see the ship is still afloat, if heavily damaged. The sea monster is nowhere in sight.
Look, there is a proper way to do things, and your way is quite improper. While I may be personally grateful to still be breathing, you and your associate are not legally allowed to be here. So by law, I have to take you in. Now get down here, or we will shoot.
Thor? Wasp? We could really use your help back here.
So, God of Thunder, what's it gonna be? Do you think you can withstand the might of the United States of America?
The more important question is, can you withstand the storm?
Overhead, the clouds start to darken and roil with energy. Thor's eyes become blue-white points of electrical energy as he quickens the pace of Mjolnir's whirling. The water becomes choppy again, and the wind kicks up, knocking the sailors about and keeping them from maintaining a clear shot.
Wasp! Your hand!
the Wasp reaches up from the water and grabs his hand before the pair disappears into a white-hot explosion of energy and light. The sailors all shield their eyes and try to blink away the spots as they attempt to reorient themselves.
Well, that went well. We just got schooled by a god and a girl.
Adams, shut the fuck up.
Minutes earlier, back in the medical tent, the nearly frozen man has awakened. His blue eyes dart about the tent and quickly size up what he will be up against. There are machines wired up around him that he has never seen before, beeping and screaming at him. A man in a silver helmet and a red and black jumpsuit approaches him, flanked by a red and gold automaton with a glowing core and a man with a dark complexion in odd clothing. But there is no one with any allied insignias, which can only mean one thing. He starts testing the restraints on him.
All right, Rogers. Let's get out of here.
Whoa. Hey there. You need to calm down.
Captain America breaks through the simple leather restraints, holding him to the makeshift bed, and tosses aside the thermal blankets before leaping towards the approaching man.
I don't think so, Kraut.
Just before Cap's fist can connect with the man's helmeted head, he vanishes. The automaton jukes to the side and puts both hands out. The center of both palms hum and glow with the same light as its core.
Dude, chill.
Did you hear what he called Giant Man? He thinks he's still in the war.
Then I guess we'll have that conversation the hard way.
Giant Man reappears as he manages to catch Captain America with an uppercut. Captain America stumbles back and reassesses his situation. He realizes the silver helmeted man does not disappear. He can change his size. He sets aside the absurdity of that as he spies his shield across the tent. A plan of attack begins to form in his head.
The only conversation you'll have is with the Fuhrer, when you tell him you almost captured me.
Cap feints a jab towards this giant man, anticipating his shrinking act. Cap kicks quick at where the man has been standing. He feels something impact with the tip of his boot. An instant later, the shrinking man reappears as he crashes into the ground. But Cap has already moved on to the automaton as he flings himself towards it. He wraps one wrist with part of the restraint yet on him, grapples it, then tosses it over his shoulder. It hits the ground with a heavy thud, letting out a very human-like grunt of pain.
Damn, he's fast and strong.
Thor? Wasp? We could really use your help back here.
Cap rounds to square off with the last man, but he just throws up his hands and backs away.
Whoa, no way, man. I'm not tussling with Captain America. I like my nose just the way it is. You want to run? Go for it.
Smart move, soldier. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Captain America walks past him and grabs his trusty shield. He pushes open the tent flap, fully expecting more soldiers to try and stop him. But what he sees stops him in his tracks. There is no POW camp, no soldiers, nothing that he was expecting. Just snow, some rocks, and a couple of tents, and a plane-like contraption several yards away. Some people walk by nonchalantly, only to be startled by his appearance. The cold wind slaps him in the face as he slowly steps forward. He hears the tent flap open behind him and spins back around to face the threat, shield up in a defensive position.
Whoa. Hey, we mean you no harm, Captain.
Where the hell am I?
At that moment, the wind kicks up and there is a booming roar of thunder behind Captain America. He spins again, fully expecting another attack. Instead, he sees two figures in a blasted out crater that was not there a moment ago. One is a tall, muscular man, wearing medieval armor and carrying an oddly proportioned hammer. He is gasping and obviously weakened. He is being supported by a lithe, dare he say attractive, woman in a form-fitting jumpsuit and helmet, like the shrinking man's outfit from earlier. She levels her free arm at him. Smoke is pouring out of a contraption on her wrist, but he can tell by her stance she is not concerned about it.
Who the hell are you?
Ma'am? Do you need to put on some clothes?
Do I what? And did you just ma'am me?
The other two strange beings bound out of the medical tent finally. The one called Giant Man does not shrink this time, but instead grows to an incredible height, apparently living up to the title. The automaton also takes flight, while many devices appear from the thing's body, all pointing at Cap.
We're not your enemies, but I will put you back on ice if you don't calm the hell down.
Captain America falters for the first time since he woke up. He glances around at the strange group of people as he tries to formulate a battle plan.
Captain, the question is not where, it's when.
No, that's... you're just trying to trick me.
Giant Man, what's going on?
Honestly, other than getting our butts kicked, I have no idea.
Well, get one. I think Thor's hurt, and he's very heavy.
Yeah, right. Iron Man, cover me.
You betcha.
Giant Man stalks over to the pair and gently eases Thor off the woman. Thor brushes Giant Man's hand off and straightens up. Now free, she slowly approaches Captain America.
Look, I can't pretend to even know what's going on here, but you just managed to make those two work together for the first time tonight. So I'm going to take that as a sign. I'm the Wasp, and these are my teammates. We're the Avengers, and we don't mean you any harm.
You know what? I believe you. If only because the Axis forces would never let a woman dress like you or talk to a man the way you do.
Well, that's oddly chauvinistic. How about we sit down and you tell us what happened, from your perspective?
There's not much to say. I was on a classified mission, and I really need to make contact with Alliance HQ.
That's what I've been trying to tell you. It's not 1944. It's 2013. And we have a lot to catch you up on.
The Avengers Audio Drama Season 1, Episode 2, Captain America. Starring Elizabeth Cole as Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp. Nate Lodbrook as Tony Stark, Iron Man. Mitch MacFarlane as Dr. Bruce Banner, the Hulk. Lamar Richardson as Dr. Hank Pym, Giant Man. Joey Sorlis as Steve Rogers, Captain America. Oscar Stavemeyer as Thor. N7 Legend as Jarvis. Dom Sorlis as Atuma. Gerald Hill as James Rhodey Rhodes. Rebecca Olivia Hodges as Betty Ross. Sophia Justine as Atlantean Counselor 1 and Technician Trainer. Jesus Gonzalez as Atlantean Counselor 2 and Fishing Boat Captain. Josiah Hagberg as Technical Soldier and Customs Agent. Genesis as Captain Williams. Nathan Marchand as XO Alenko. D.V. Knight as Ensign Adams. With Ryan Lawton as Namor. And Jenny McGinnis as the narrator. Adapted from Avengers number 3 and number 4 by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Written and directed by Mitch MacFarlane. Art by Thomas Rippert. Marvel music covers provided by Neal Stenson. Other royalty-free sound effects and music provided by freesound.org and Declan Gilgallon. Audio engineered by Joey Sorlis. Proofreading and script editing by Holly A. Yu and Nathan Phoenix. Special thanks to the patrons of Scyther Productions and Carl Dutton. This is a fan-made production, all rights reserved, no copyright infringement intended. This season is dedicated with love and respect to Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, Larry Lieber, and Don Heck. Excelsior!